Text 23 was the first one. The two fought furiously in single combat, each determined to win, contending against each other with various weapons and then with stones, tree trunks, finally with their bare arms. They struggled like two hawks battling over a piece of flesh. So if we remember, this is Jambavan and Krishna. Krishna was looking for the Shamataka jewel to clear his name. And actually, to clear his name, it's actually, when I was thinking about that, it's because it disturbs his devotees if Krishna has somebody saying something about Krishna. For himself, it wouldn't mind so much, but it disturbs his devotees. And a similar situation was with Lord Chaitanya with Prakashananda Saraswati. His disciples, his devotees, were feeling uncomfortable because of they kept hearing things that he was saying. So Lord Chaitanya, he did that also for the pleasure of his devotees, or Krishna, Bhakti Vatsala. Text 24. The fight went on without rest for 28 days, the two opponents striking each other with their fists, which fell like the cracking blows of lightning. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that the fight continued day and night without interruption. Now, if we just think about that for a moment, I can't even stay awake the whole night, much less be engaged. And that's one night, and then you have to eat again. So, I mean, there's 28 days, so we can just think a moment about the strength that Jambavan had. For Krishna, we can understand a little bit from our knowledge of Krishna, but Jambavan, being a jiva, how strong he must be to be able to even stay awake for 28 days, much less be in intense fighting day and night. I say a little bit. Om Agyana Timirvandasya Janajana Salakaya Chaksum Militanyena Tasmaya Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Swabhidam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Katamayam Tatanti Swapatanti Kam Jaitam Saritopan Gaur Mamamanda Matera Gati Matsarvasa Patambo Jo Radha Madana Mahano. So we're going to go to text 25, but I don't know if there's anybody that can move the screen. Oh, he's back. I put that in there, giving him a little time. So a little bit of the physiognomy of Jambavan. His bulging muscles, pummeled by the blows of Lord Krishna's fists, his strength faltered, and his limbs perspiring, Jambavan, greatly astonished, finally spoke to the Lord. So if we can recall yesterday, Sesha gave a class, nice class, and he mentioned three things that he read from Queen Kunti's prayers. What was it, 1:8:19 or something like that? One, the three reasons why someone won't recognize Krishna. Oh, you remember? What were they? A poor fund of knowledge. Stubborn obstinacy. Imperfect senses. Okay, so also Krishna may also mention these same things in the Bhagavad Gita about a stubborn obstinacy. What creatures generally, what is it? Mudha or vimudha. And then if they have no knowledge because it's been stolen by illusion, maya prajnana, so they're also dumb. So another name for a Vimudha is a what? What is it? So he's a dumb. And then, anyway, so here we're seeing something is changing. At this particular verse, there's a change that's taking place. He's now, those three things are being removed. He's coming to his senses, his spiritual senses, and his knowledge. He actually was engaged in a sacrifice. He was pleasing Krishna. Krishna wanted to fight, and he says, where is he going to find somebody good to fight with him? Kamsa, that was no challenge. He took him off his chair and, you know, bomb. You're a tough guy. So by sacrifice, what's it, 4:33, it says sacrifice culminates in knowledge. So what's the unique feature of sacrifice is the consciousness, is that you're doing this to please Krishna. So we know, where, if you don't recognize, where are you going to find Krishna? First of all, you have to be looking for him. If you're looking for him, where are you going to look? What are you going to look with? So these are, I had a couple other things written down too. So these are some questions. If you're looking, what, first of all, you have to look for Krishna. Sometimes he just appears, like here with Jambavan. He just appeared. Great surprise. So where do you find Krishna? Where is he situated? The all-pervading transcendence is eternally situated in acts of sacrifice. So you find sacrifice, if you perform sacrifice with the right consciousness, your heart's involved. And where's the knowledge? This knowledge is within your heart. So it's a different kind of knowledge, which is beyond the senses. So you can get the sense knowledge, but Krishna is in the heart. He gives clues, 15:15, you know, by all the Vedas I am to be known. I'm situated in everyone's heart. So we'll read 26. So here's the new Jambavan. He's now on the other side of recognizing. Now he's recognizing Krishna. And also, one other point that I thought we could mention. Has anybody else ever fought with Krishna? We have different other personalities that got in different skirmishes with Krishna. And what's it? Sri Upanishad 4, is it? He says he's faster than anybody. He can defeat all others running, even if they're not running. He can defeat all others. So he's also fighting. So who else fought with Krishna? Bhishma? Grandfather Bhishma? Oh, all conditioned souls. Now, is anybody in this room fighting with Krishna? Do we recognize Krishna? Because, well, let's see, he's a hoaxaja. And what was the other things he called you? A dumb that... we're not always finding Krishna in ourself, even though he's situated right in our heart, because of a couple different reasons. So these points can also be applied. Now here, Jambavan may have been one of the strongest living entities. Who could go 28 days? Who could have big, big muscles like that? So all of us are also, what was the, there was just three things. Stubborn obstinacy, right? That was one. Poor fundamental, okay, so our knowledge is being increased all the time. So that one, we have good knowledge. The stubborn obstinacy may be a little close. All right. So here's Jambavan speaking. Jambavan said, I know now, so there's a change, that you are the life air and the sensory, mental, and bodily strength of all living beings. So just see the knowledge that was revealed to him during this skirmish. He came to understand that he's the life air and sensory, mental, and bodily strength of all living beings. You are Lord Vishnu, the original person, the supreme, all-powerful controller. That's quite a realization to have. How many people get in a fight and come up with this as a conclusion? This is quite extraordinary. You are the ultimate creator of all creators of the universe, and everything created. You are the underlying substance. You are the subduer of all subduers, the supreme Lord, the supreme soul of all souls. And the purport, as mentioned, Lord Kapila states in the Srimad Bhagavatam 3:25-42. Anybody? Death himself moves out of fear of me. Okay. And there's one more verse. You are he who impels the ocean to give way when his sidelong glances, slightly manifesting his anger, disturb the crocodiles and the trimmingilla fish within the watery depths. You are he who built a great bridge to establish his fame, who burned down the city of Lanka, and whose arrows severed the heads of Ravana, which then fell to the ground. So we know that he was a great Ram Bhakta. And we can see here, as soon as he's going through his different recollections, his mood of understanding who Krishna is, and then we see that his natural smarnam of Lord Ram is manifesting in this last verse. So in these verses here, now we're up to the 10th canto, chapter 56. And in all these verses, in all these pastimes, the Srimad Bhagavatam is meant to reestablish our relationship with Krishna and understanding Krishna's different features. So we see that Jambavan is also giving us these things. He didn't start right off with the Leela. He also went through his different features. Brahman, Paramatman, Bhagavan, his life, air, sensory, mental, bodily, strength of all living entities, all pervading nature. And in the same way, if we think in terms of other verses in the Bhagavad Gita, I was thinking of 10:7 is a nice verse that pops into the mind, that he was fighting. And because, well, there's actually different reasons, but basically we're also in a situation of learning and developing our surrendered attitude. So 10:7 is, for one who is factually convinced of this opulent and mystic power of mine, engages in unalloyed devotional service. Of this there's no doubt. So one of the things that we're understanding here is, if Jambavan didn't win, do you think that maybe we would? Maybe I would. Maybe if I got in a battle with Krishna, I would win. So we're gradually finding out that we're not going to win this battle. And when you see you're not going to win, what do you do? If you see that I'm just going to... I'm probably going to die right soon. So what do? You surrender. Yeah, you put up the white flag. I surrender. Now I agree to do what you say. So in the Bhagavad Gita, also that's the conclusion, 1866, Sarvadhamma. So Krishna is explaining all these different points. What's the verse? The wise... let's see, 5:22. We're starting to see that. Let me just read 5:22. think it was 522. All right. An intelligent person. So remember there's the three reasons that one didn't surrender. So one was a poor fund of knowledge. So in this knowledge, we're understanding the process of nescience and that of transcendental knowledge side by side. And if you do, you get to enjoy the full blessings of immortality. So what's the word for enjoy is ashnute, which is also used in the Bhagavad Gita 13.13, which is explaining what is the nature of beyond cause and effect, the nature of Brahman. Maybe I'll read 13.13 and then I'll come back to that. Because the Sanskrit is such a fascinating language, even though I'm challenged by it. But you can take each word and just go off on and on it. But this one, 13.13, is, I shall now explain to you the knowable. So we were just talking about poor fund of knowledge. So the knowable, knowing which you will taste the eternal. So this ashnute, that's the taste, that's tasting, the eternal. Brahman, the spirit that lies, the spirit, beginningless, subordinate to me, that lies beyond the cause and effect of this material world. So, what would you say you are? Are you this body, or are you something different? So, Krishna says, I'm going to explain to you, Brahman, the spirit. Well, guess what? That's also aham brahmasmi. We're also aham brahmasmi. Lies beyond the cause and effect of this material world. So if we go back to that, 522 says, an intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery, which are due to contact with the material senses. So there's Ahoksucha. He's on the other side of that. O son of Kunti, such pleasures have a beginning and an end, and the wise man does not delight in them. Oh, there was another verse I was thinking of that was talking about, maybe, where's that one? 3:15. Yeah. I can't do that. Maybe it's 3:15. Let me just check this one other verse. And it's a wise, he also knows the difference between fruitive activities and devotional service. That's what he knows the difference between. So the fruit of activities, that's engaging the senses. And for a term, sometimes I make up words or ideas just so I can remember them. So I call it, sense gratification is a rasa blocker. A rasa blocker. Because ultimately this ashnute, this taste, is because Krishna has, but we're part and parcel of Krishna, and our constitutional relationship with him is to exchange loving exchanges, which they call rasa. And right now we're in a situation that has no value. We're in a reflected situation here in the material world, which is being continued by sense gratification. So because of that, we're not being able to taste our natural condition, our param jisu navardhante. And in looking at it, just like Krishna, his main function is, well, not main function, but he's a bhakti vatsala, that he always enjoys, it's a pararamata. He enjoys himself in the association of his devotees, exchanging rasa. And this is our position. So as long as we're not recognizing Krishna, because one of those couple reasons, poor fund of knowledge, stubborn obstinacy, and Krishna is a hoaxer, so we have to know where to look for him. Like, for instance, we were talking about appreciating Krishna. He asked us yesterday also about seeing Krishna, appreciating Krishna. So who knows some of the ways that Krishna is already incarnated in our lives? Oh, we got one. Maybe. Go ahead. Taste of water, a little bit more. So in the holy name, how do you say that in Sanskrit? Nama Rupe, Krishna, Avatar. And what was the 1340 verse in the Bhagavatam? Pushkar. Oh, there you go. His voice is scratching. So you want to say what that one is? You know the English for that one? 1-3, what, a little rusty. At least you have rust. Boy. Okay. Thank you. So already Krishna has appeared in a couple different ways. Now, this, when we were talking earlier about sacrifice, now sacrifice culminates in knowledge, knowledge which is within the heart. So what was right after that, the next verse? It was 4:33 in the Bhagavad Gita that talks about sacrifice culminates in knowledge. So what's after 4:33 is 4:34. And that's a major top 10, is it? Which is, and see, they're all related. Everything is related, so it's so nice to put things together. You can weave them into nice garlands of verses and tapestries. So in 33, it says, O chastiser, the enemy. So also we could think, where's another enemy? Does anybody have any enemies that are very, it says you can keep your enemies very close at hand. Where's another enemy? No, the mind, okay. We have all these different enemies. With init, inside it's asatsanga tyage vaishnav charan. So it's not just external asatsanga, it's also internal asatsanga. So, O chastiser, the enemy, you have to, at Lord Vrishabhdev deals with the mind quite a bit. The sacrifice performed in knowledge is better than a mere sacrifice of material possessions. After all, O son of Britta, all sacrifices of work culminate in transcendental knowledge. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a bona fide spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge to you because he has seen the truth. So what is that? We're talking about making the distinction between fruitive activities and pleasing Krishna. What happens when you please Krishna? Even when you're doing sacrifice, you're happy by sacrifice. You become happy. When you don't please Krishna, you engage in sense gratification, and it's a source of misery. So from many different angles, he's making the same point over and over again. The body, the field of activities, is made up of a mind, senses, sense objects. The whole creation is just based on senses, sense objects, and an identification with it. How do you break the identification with it? That's a surrender. We see it today in Jambavan. He came to his senses. You're not going to win. So that takes place. It's a change of heart. It's a change of spirit. One moment, it's fighting like anything. I mean, he had to be putting out some serious energy in this fight. So when we're thinking, you know what a Griha Vrata is? Anybody remember 7:530? Anantakobir Vishatosatova. It says, okay, that's a griha, griha, griha vrata. He's taken a vow. He's taken a vow that I'm going to become happy in this world. Griha vrata. So Prabhupada mentions in this one lecture, he lectured on this quite a few times, but the one in Denver, I forgot the year, but he gave this really extraordinary lecture. Maybe there was something going on that sometimes comes into his lectures, but where he mentions it. Oh, you're putting up on the screen there, Keshava? So could you read it then? It's easier than me turning my head.
Prahlad Maharaj replied, because of their uncontrolled senses, persons too addicted to materialistic life make progress toward hellish conditions and repeatedly chew that which has already been chewed. Their inclinations toward Krishna are never aroused, either by the instructions of others, by their own efforts, or by a combination of both.
They are dragged to their by their unbridled senses to the darkest regions of ignorance. So this, in this particular one, the lecture that he gave in Denver, he says, even by the instructions of your guru, you can't do it because of this griha vrata, which he translated that time as, you've taken a vow that I'm going to be happy in this world. I'm making plans, I have some idea on how to do that. And then he calls it this chewing the chewed. So if you think about, why is sense gratification called chewing the chewed? There's all varieties of it. You know, you can get, they have a new improved version that just came out, you can get it for no money down for next year. And, you know, so it's because it's the same thing. It's not ever fresh. See, Krishna has maybe a 4:30:20. I used that one a couple times. Where there, one of Krishna's names is Navayovanam, where he's ever fresh. And so sense gratification is compared to stale, because it's the same sense gratification. So if you think about it, why is sense gratification the same thing? There's so many varieties of it. Why is it considered the same thing? These are some thoughts that you have to think about. It never gives you satisfaction. It's a source of misery, but that's theoretical until actually when it happens. But then you're so disturbed you can't think clearly anyway. So it's best to cut it off at the pass, you know, to not get involved until it turns into misery. Because if we remember the mode of passion, it's not so hard to remember the mode of passion. It says that it seems like it's going to be very tasty in the beginning. It seems like you're really going to be happy and maybe even experience a little bit of flickering chappala sukala happiness. But then the longer amount of time is in this miserable condition. So then you have to consider the mode of passion as a package, and you have to give up the whole package. It's not like half-hand. I'll take the part where it'll be happy, and I'll get rid of the part where it won't be happy. And that's, of course, what modern culture is about. Buy the new one. Because your last one, the batteries wore out, and we have another model now. So if you always keep buying new stuff, in fact, isn't that one of the ways that a lot of people deal when they're feeling down? Let's go to the mall and buy something. And they do quite a good business because people are down a lot. You know, there's not much juice here. But somebody posted this the other day. I don't know if anybody else saw it, but you get these different posts. And it was Jerry Seinfeld. People know him. He's a comic, a smart comic. They gave him a Clio Award. I don't know exactly what that is, but it's some kind of a, what is it? For advertising. And he gets up and he says, He says, I always wanted to lie and cheat to people. It just makes me feel so good. So now I'm in advertising. And they gave me an award for that. And he goes on and on like that, which I don't know why they didn't pull him, you know, like the hook came out and grab him. Because he says, if I can remember some of his things, he says, everybody knows that this product is not the way they're advertising it. But they want to believe it's going to work. So they pay their hard-earned money for it, all the while knowing it's not going to work. But they're happy when they bought it till they get home. This is about 10 minutes, 20-minute ride. And then that amount of time that they're happy, they think that's worth it. He said, because after they get home, they see it doesn't work, and they knew it wasn't going to work. But they were happy for that 5 minutes. So in their, he goes on and on, like, in their miserable, shallow lives, that this is what you, this 5 minutes makes everything worthwhile. I was thinking maybe I could figure out how to put it onto another site so that it was so accurate. Then he says, but he says, I don't really particularly care about this. In fact, I'm not even sure if I'll get it home. He says, because I'll be dead in a little while anyway, and then somebody will just come and either sell it or throw it away. You know, so what is the value of it? He said, but I know the value of it, because in 1991, they made a mistake in calculating how many they needed, so there was a couple left over. And he says, after the show was over, a bunch of the directors and administrators all ran up and grabbed them, so they must be important. Even though they know they didn't qualify to get them, and there wasn't any rightful way to get it, still they came up and took them. So it must be a valuable thing for them to risk their reputations to do such a thing. And he's saying all this in the air. So I was thinking that same way. When we think about the mode of passion, if we can get control of it by our intelligence, not to lose our intelligence, which Krishna says, if you think about those senses for a little too long, you're going to lose your memory and your intelligence, and everything else is going to disappear too. So that's more or less the sliding board into the mode of passion, is you just contemplate how you're going to be happy by some adjustment. But you can't stop. That's the point. You can't stop looking for happiness because it's our constitutional position. We just have to remember how to recognize it in the correct way, how to recognize Krishna. And then you get the ashmita, you get the taste, param just navardante. And then even though the senses continue to bombard you, the 270, the sense of flow of desires, one has the strength to reject it because he's performing sacrifice to please Krishna by chanting the holy name. But the essential item is the consciousness of servant. I'm servant of Krishna. I'm here to please him. Prabhupada mentioned one time, when you live to be enjoyed by Krishna, that's liberated. That's the liberated mentality. I live to be enjoyed. So I'm going to stop there. Questions or comments?
A little comment. The same situation that happened between Jambavan and Krishna had happened between Arjuna and Lord Shiva. I don't know if anybody could recall that scene.
When he got his Gandiva bow?
He was fighting, you know, the two of them were fighting, and he started to strike Lord Shiva with the bow eventually, and nothing was happening. Then with fists scrambling and everything, nothing was happening. Then he started to pray to Lord Shiva. I think he had a garland or something, and then the garland appeared on the pirata, on the hunter, and he realized this is.
Quadrivida gorilla. He uprooted trees, he bumped boulders. I mean, so it's a same. I guess when you're really strong, these kind of things you can do. I have trouble just pulling out a weed in my yard. You know, I can't imagine uprooting a tree. Every once in a while, you see these little teeny trees growing about the same size as the weed, and you go to pull one of them up, you can't even pull out. It's only a quarter of an inch thick and maybe a foot high or something. You can't even pull it out then. Imagine pulling out a tree, what kind of strength these people had. And they didn't win. So somehow or other, in our heart, there's a change of heart. There's a fighting spirit. There's that mood that I'm not going to surrender. And we're getting ready to. I mean, that's why we're here. We're planning one. I'm going to surrender soon. I know I will. It's like going on a diet. I'm going to do it soon. Any day now. So that same idea, we're getting ready to it. And then I think there's an explanation too about the boat to cross the ocean. The material existence is surrender, and you spend your life building the boat. But then when you're finished building the boat of surrender, the whole ocean shrinks, and it turns into a little puddle and a calf's footprint puddle, and you can just step over it. So we're building up good reasons why we should surrender. Is anybody ready? We're going to surrender today, or maybe tomorrow. Maybe. Okay.
What would be the practical way that we can accelerate coming to the point of recognizing Krishna's presence in our life?
Wanting to...
How can we accelerate coming to the point, accelerate the process, so we most quickly come to the point of recognizing Krishna in our life, not being continuing to be oblivious to his presence?
Well, there's lots of different ways. Everybody has a slight unique thing, like with Lord Brahma. Krishna mentioned to him that I'm very much pleased by your use of ingenuity. I think it's 2922 in executing. Also, there's penance. That's 294, but it was ingenuity I thought was an interesting thing to notice. is that? Does that have the word ingenuity in it? If I got it right. Boy, you can't bluff here when he's got that in front of him. Maybe you could read it and I could tell. Go ahead then, read it. 2922? 2. 2. Let me just see. Would you actually like to surrender and be with Krishna all the time? Would you actually like to be with Krishna all the time? You would? So then what's stopping, is it? Is there something you're not sure about?
Damn mind.
What is it?
It's damn mind.
You need some money?
No.
Oh, the mind.
Damn mind.
I think Lakshmi Rani, she was there. So, what's it say? Does it say something about ingenuity there? Maybe read it out loud.
The highest perfectional ingenuity is the personal perception of my abodes. And this has been possible because of your submissive attitude in the performance of severe penance according to my order.
So if you go back to 294, let's see if I got that one right.
O King, the personality of Godhead, being very much pleased with Lord Brahma because of his non-deceptive penance in Bhakti Yoga, presented his eternal and transcendental form before Brahma. And that is the objective goal for purifying the conditioned soul.
So, for us, penance means sadhana. Because penance basically is the... Sambandha Gyan is in order. When you're performing penance, it means, as you're talking about with your mind, the mind doesn't maintain Sambandha Gyan. You can notice that each thing that each communication that's taking place is, it has a philosophy built into it. Like sense gratification. Generally when the mind speaks, it speaks sense gratification. That's the language it talks. It talks with a, what do they call it? Entrapment, that you're the body, sense gratification. These are inferred context that the mind speaks from. You already know that you're the body. You already know that sense gratification will make you happy. It infers it. It doesn't even have to repeat it over and over again. It knows it has a captive audience. So it comes with that. So if you, the penance means to restate the Sambandha Gyan and function in your Sambandha Gyan. So that's pulling 622, bringing the mind back wherever it wanders. You know, you have to bring it back under the control of the self. So that's penance, that's our sadhana. And oh, you got something, or are you just fixing your glasses?
What's that?
Oh, I saw. I wasn't sure if he was raising his hand. Oh, he did. So this penance, this sambandha. See, they use the same words in many different ways, but basically, if you keep having a problem with your mind going out of sambandha, then you have to do penance over again. And when you do it over again, it's called repent. You know what repent is? Okay, repent has another element to it besides just coming up with putting your Sambandha Gyan in there. It has, see, it mentioned 13 was submissive. It's a spirit is submissive to Krishna. It's subordinate to Krishna. So when you recognize your Sambandha Gyan, you're subordinate to Krishna. The mind's not subordinate to Krishna. The mind wants to fight with Krishna. It's always saying, you know, like, why serve you? I mean, we're beguiled by the serpent of... Did you want to say something more?
Are you finished?
Oh, we got this.
I'll just make a quick comment. Basically, what you're in essence saying is that we have to put the highest priority in chanting our japa. You may not have said it in those words, but that's essentially what you're saying.
Your relationship with Krishna. And there's a very portable form. Krishna is there. But the idea is that japa never stops. I mean, glorification of Krishna doesn't stop. Ahoy to kiya patiyata. I mean, it's a change that takes place in the heart. It's a change of the fighting spirit to the subordinate spirit, surrender.
But in answer to my question, isn't that really what we're talking about? You
know, okay,
of all of the rules and regulations, you know,
always remember.
The two most important
forget.
Are to remember Krishna, not forget him, and do it in a particular
And that's also
mood.
That's our penance.
Yeah. Okay. But then, in the purport to that verse, Madhya 22, whatever. Prabhupada says that of all the instructions of the spiritual master, chanting of 16 rounds, No. He says first, the best way to remember Krishna is to chant Hare Krishna. And then he says, that kind of fits in line with the verse, that of all the instructions of the spiritual master, the chanting of 16 rounds is the most essential. And so when you really look at it, that's where we can accelerate things in the most powerful way. Yes.
Okay. We have a lucky one. He has her hand up. It's coming. Thank you.
How to increase our meditation on japa, how to increase our meditation on Krishna, Kunti says, pray for calamities. Right? Because when calamities happen or we feel insecure, then we chant better, we chant more sincerely, we do everything with intensity and focus on Krishna. When we take risks for Krishna, put ourselves or are put in, maybe sometimes kicking and screaming, uncomfortable situations, then we accelerate our intensity of focusing on Krishna. When we stay in our comfort zone, then we chant japa, but we chant in between the Z mantra, either mentally or physically.
Along that same point, Queen Kunti also mentioned, he says that this qualification for chanting, she listed four things, Aishwarya Shubir. He says, so anyone who's trying, that's also the, kind of like the Griya Vrata extension, is what is, how do you try to take the vow to be happiness world as good birth, which is karma kanda section, good education, so you can control the material energy for your artha kama section. And so each one of those things there. Now, if you put it into the Varna Ashram context, just like we're hearing, even with this Jambavan, we can also look at it because you have something valuable, you want to protect it. You're not so easy to give it up. Just like if it used to be mentioned, give 50% of your salary to spreading Krishna consciousness. We don't hear them so often anymore, but it used to be quite common to hear that. So we think, I am mine. So because that tendency, if someone says, you should use this, no, it's mine, there's an order of life that recognizes this could cause a type of pride which will slow down my development of Krishna consciousness. So just like Lakshmaroni was pointing out, that you put yourself in a comfort zone, take risks for Krishna. Basically, she's saying preaching. So we find that some people, in recognizing that, they renounce their comfortable situation for preaching. In fact, that's a situation that's supposed to fructify out of the household or ashram. At a certain age, one is supposed to be preaching as much as he can in the household or ashram, and then to increase his field of preaching, he changes his ashram. And also some of the other benefits is he doesn't have anything of this material nature that he's not engaging in Krishna service. It's possible for householders, we know Bhakti, you know, there's plenty that have done that, but you have to also have to see for yourself, you know, if that tendency is there when you have something and you want to protect it, you want to think it's yours, how much of it you are actually using in Krishna's service. So there's a natural progression from many different angles that was in the Vedic scheme of things. When that knowledge was prevalent through all the aspects of culture, people naturally recognized that this preaching is how you get closer to Krishna. So that's another answer to your question, is combining these things is to go out on the limb, so to speak. And I remember when Prabhupada was very pleased with, I think it was Babananda and, what was it, from San Francisco, these nice kirtans. He called the the scientists, he says that chickens are better scientists than you are because you can make an egg. Hamsa Duda, Prabhupada, he liked that when we had a debate with a big scientist, and he said, but a chicken can make an egg and you can't, therefore a chicken's a better. Anyway, Prabhupada liked that, and we know Bhaktisiddhanta, he was very fond of taking risks, boldly preaching. You know, not that it's artificial or insensitive, you have to have the qualification to do it correctly, but at the same time, it's to try to, who's the most dear to Krishna? We want to become dear to Krishna. It's 1869. And Pran has been waiting very patiently.
Thank you for stretching the importance of preaching.
Is it got the red light on? Oh, there you go. Up close.
That Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sadhguru made a very nice point that also similar Srila Prabhupada to Harikesh Maharaj. When Harikesh Maharaj, after the class, glorified Prabhupada. Oh, Prabhupada, you give such a nice, defeated all the argument. Then Prabhupada said, that's very nice. He said, yes, Prabhupada, best. He said, glorifying Guru in the temple is very nice, but the real glorification of Guru, when you go outside and you face the opposition, you establish your Guru's position, that is real glory to Guru. I was thinking about it. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, similar, he says, how do you know you have a faith on your Guru and Krishna? How do you know? Only place you can test, when you go outside and opposition comes by Maya's creation from the conditioned soul, and see within your heart at that time how you can establish. That time the real test will come, whether I have a faith. And if I have a faith, they will come back, come to Krishna.
And you'll be able to touch their heart.
Yes.
Because as one advances, he it's the compassion, full compassion for the fallen souls, that it's not about like just winning the argument. It's being able to establish a relationship with the person. The six Goswamis, they were popular both with the ruffians and the gentle because they were non-envious. So he actually feels camaraderie with every living entity, not that I'm better, but he feels a connection with every living entity, sama sarveshu bhuteshu, then it's madbhaktin labhate param. It's another, and also in the pandit, the 7, 5, 12, maybe it's a little too late, but 7, 5, 12, we can still put it up. This verse is so nice, because it talks, it clears the air on a misunderstood word, very popular. Can someone read it? Maybe you could read it.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead is pleased with the living entity because of his devotional service. One becomes a pandit and does not make distinctions between enemies, friends, and himself. Intelligently, he then thinks, every one of us is an eternal servant of God, and they are not different from one another.
So that's preaching. He's the pandit. It's not that the memorization of a lot of verses, passing the different exams. Here's something very practical. I grew up in a practical field. I was a mechanic. So it was a little different than the academic community, where it's not always connected to anything except itself, and they create their own values. But a mechanic, it actually has to work. So it trains. It's a different kind of person that you associate with. So. We always have to see the practical. Here's a practical pandit, is that he has the blessings of Krishna, that he, sama sarveshu bhuteshu, he's not seeing any more of the material designations, which means, of course, we cross-reference it with 1, 2, 19, because he comes to know scientifically the personality of Godhead because he's out of the mode of passion. And passion is symbolized by designations. So he's out of the designations. Now he's applied the knowledge because we go back to Bhagavad Gita 434, so 435 is that same point. We just got to it from another angle. Where he says he knows that all beings are Krishna's. So surrender the mode of passion. Happiness is relationships. Relationships in the material world are based on men and women. When you can free yourself from the mode of passion, you come free from the designations of men and women, you see everyone as eternal servant of Krishna. Even if you're the most sinful people, you're on this boat of transcendental knowledge, you can cross over the ocean of miseries. The ocean of miseries is the bodily conception of life based on trying to find happiness through men-women relationships, which is the basically the griha. What's a griha? A griha vrata. How about a griha medhi? Medhi is the pole that everything turns around. In India, they grind grains and they do different things by having a big pole and an ox, which is almost like a bull, but there's a slight change in his organs, where he just works, and works. So anyway, he goes around in a circle. He doesn't go anywhere, but he walks in a circle. So that circle is on, the thing that's holding him in that circle is called a meti. So there's degree of vrata and there's degree of meti. So that's just what it says. Glory to Prabhupada.